Welcome to Moving to Cloud, What's the Best Approach for Me? Panel, sponsored by NetApp and Blue River IT. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. Our guests today are Harry Lee, the Senior Computer Scientist for Infrastructure at the Census Bureau, Mary Jean Schmidt, she is Federal Business Development Manager at NetApp. Sandra Kuntz is Director of Production and Operations and Infrastructure in the Office of the CIO at the Peace Corps. And Dave McLaughlin, CEO and owner of Blue River IT. And we're going to get right to it. Clearly, cloud figures in the future of federal computing, what federal agencies are doing. So I wanted to get an idea from our two federal agency guests what your basic strategy right now is for cloud, now that we're, I guess, 4 or 5 years into the cloud era, if you will, for the federal government. Agencies are at different levels of development. Harry, why don't we start with you? Tell us what's going on cloud-wise and what your strategy is for Census Bureau.
Well, thanks, Tom. Quite a bit going along cloud-wise. A lot of it is preparation rather than really moving things to the cloud. I'll talk about that now a little bit later as well. But we're looking at a hybrid cloud strategy approach, really looking at what we want to protect internally in a private cloud type of environment, and then what we can actually provide externally in a public cloud or a community cloud, such as a government or academic community. One of the key things is no matter what level of service we provide our users, it needs to be transparent, if it's internal, external, or wherever. So a lot of focus on creating a service catalog where the user community can interact and just request services. IT looking to become a broker of services to include cloud is kind of our strategy. One of the things that we're doing as we implement new discipline around building systems is looking at some policies when we look at design alternatives, things like virtualized first, things like shared first or cloud first. Doesn't mean you have to go to the cloud or have to use a shared service, but you need to look at it as an alternative. So really we're putting that discipline in the way we design our systems is something else as part of our strategy. And the other part of our strategy is we're in the data business. So we conduct surveys and censuses, and there's two primary data types. So data is really critical when you're looking at a cloud service. We have title data, which is contains personally identifiable information, PII, which is primarily a private cloud type thing. We have public use data, a lot of data via our website. We have mobile applications, and we have public application program interfaces, APIs. So some of that may become available in a cloud offering, not just from Census or not just Commerce, but government-wide. So really aligning with the federal government's strategy as well.
All right, so it sounds like you have a pretty thorough decision tree process you go through for application and data sets one by one.
Right, and what we're doing now is we're looking at commonalities around that business of data and how we collect data, how we process it, analyze it, store it, disseminate it. And based on those commonalities, looking at where cloud offerings may suit providing the capability the business is looking for.
Okay, and let's move to Sandra Kuntz from the Peace Corps. And you're not quite as far along in the cloud yet. What is the strategy? What are you thinking about in an agency that does span the globe?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you mentioned, our agency does span the globe, and that's one of our biggest challenges, is making sure whatever solutions we put into place work well domestically. We have locations around this country, and that's never really much of a challenge. But in our 70 overseas locations, our biggest challenge is always bandwidth, just cost of bandwidth, availability of bandwidth in many of the locations where Peace Corps works, and then just having stability, because often ISPs are available, but they're just not stable enough to allow access back to a central location or even to a cloud solution to be viable. So with that in mind, we have been focusing on looking at what makes the most sense to move to the cloud for us. And we have taken some of our main applications around volunteers and bringing volunteers into Peace Corps. Our major application in that space is now cloud-based. We also have taken our public website to the cloud, and so we're learning lessons from those things. We're learning around how to structure our contracts so that we have good SLAs in place and that we can get the best service for our money. Going forward, similar to Census, at Peace Corps, we're taking a hard look at standardization within. And we have made very good progress towards virtualization, which we think is a key point for us to be able to move things to the cloud more easily going forward. So our focus has been around looking at what we can virtualize, and always we choose a virtual solution unless there just simply is a compatibility or a service support from another vendor issue. And we're also looking at trying to streamline the applications that we support and the environments that we support. We've moved from multiple OSs, multiple solutions for databases, into a more streamlined set of solutions that we're supporting, again, with the idea that this will make moving things to the cloud easier for us.
Okay, so sounds like there's some work to do, especially in those areas of low bandwidth where it's not all like the U.S. or Western Europe where everywhere you go there's bandwidth.
Exactly.
All right, Mary Jean, NetApp is in the infrastructure business, and you've got a big footprint across data centers and what agencies do. What do you see across the board as what people's strategies are? What's, I guess, the current state of the art for federal cloud from your point of view?
Right, right. Well, NetApp is a data management company, and from that we look at cloud and some of the shared services initiatives from that lens, and we're seeing a lot of what both Harry and Sandra just echoed. So first wave, you know, private cloud adoption, both either on-premise or off, that is kind of keeping it under, you know, control of a particular agency. But more and more, as Sandra mentioned, you know, public-facing websites going to commercial cloud providers. I mean, that's kind of another wave that you mentioned earlier. And now we're seeing, as Harry mentioned, this hybrid environment. So agencies looking to a multitude of cloud service providers for different workloads, different data sensitivity requirements. And then the next step is the need to kind of, how do you marry that all up? How do you govern your data across those disparate environments? So we're basically seeing what these two agencies have described in across mostly civilian agencies, but even a little bit in the DoD community as well.
And so in data management, people want to avoid duplication of data in multiple places if possible, or by the same token, they want to have it duplicated on purpose in case there's a latency issue, so maybe East Coast, West Coast, or Eastern Hemisphere and Western Hemisphere. So how does that all play into the cloud business and thinking?
I think that's part of it, but I think the step before that is really agencies have to control and manage their data in the same way they did on-premise in their own environment when it moves to the cloud. So they have to kind of figure that out when they select a cloud service provider.
So what's good for data management is also good for cloud then, and vice versa.
Right. That's a good way of putting it.
Okay. And Dave McLaughlin from Blue River IT, tell us your perspective. Tell us a little bit about what the company does, because you started it. Yep. And so you're in this business now, and tell us what you're seeing from the federal customer standpoint.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Blue River was essentially born out of building out data centers. We would construct, design, populate, and build out what's today's modern-day infrastructure that are run throughout the federal marketplace, commercial, and so forth. So several years ago, we looked and said, okay, we've built out all these private cloud infrastructures. What's the next phase? What's the next generation? And that led us into the commercial cloud. So we did a lot of research into the commercial cloud and how that worked. What we're seeing now with our customers is the question of, okay, we have this infrastructure and we have things that we run here. How do we continue to leverage what we've invested in, but also leverage what's available on the commercial cloud? So in terms of what most people are looking for, it's more of a hybrid cloud environment from what we're seeing. As Harry mentioned, it's very, very much about the data, where it resides, how you protect it, how do you manage it, how you get it from your private cloud up into a commercial cloud and back and forth. So one thing that we're seeing is people really taking a good hard look at what kind of data do they have, how do the applications access that, how do the users get access to the applications. And from there they start to make a plan, okay, well, we want to put some applications here, some legacy applications need to remain, some can go to the cloud, and we can leverage them from that standpoint.
Oh, so many questions. Let me ask you this, though. When people are in federal agencies are out of the private cloud and in this hybrid environment and they're using the commercial cloud, that they tend to want to be single tenant or government only tenants, or are they sometimes comfortable with multi-tenancy where the other tenants are not government?
I think it depends. There's going to be a mix of, essentially comes down to more of the data. Mm-hmm. Where can I let my data reside? When people really take a look at the commercial cloud and peel back the layers of how data is written into that cloud, they would find that even in a multi-tenant type environment, the data is so distributed that it would be very difficult to piece it back together. But there's always going to be applications or specific things like PII data, for example. Mm-hmm. That has a totally different set of criteria for protecting it, managing it, than, let's say, someone's user home directories. So it really just depends. What we try and do is leverage different technologies to say, okay, if you need this segmented for you within the cloud, we can do that. If you're not so adverse to having it across, you know, a shared platform, we can do that too.
So it sounds like data has become almost a type of currency, and people are trying to find the right piggy bank to keep it in. I mean, not to make it too simple, but that's what I'm kind of hearing. And so let me ask you, Harry, data for census, as for all agencies, takes a lot of forms. There's a lot of unstructured data. You've got notes from census takers, survey forms, and then there's also rows and columns, relational database.
Yes.
Do you put those all together in one type of environment, or do you have different cloud setups or different cloud locations depending on the type of data, or does it matter?
Again, it comes down to what we call title data, restricted data, restricted use, and whatever format it might come in. You mentioned punch cards earlier. I think we're beyond that. But we do have paper data capture, and we're trying to go away from paper. More internet response and self-response. So it really, it's not the format. It's mm-hmm. when we ingest that format, how we manage it. If it's title data, we're well protected. That data that is aggregated over time, and we then provide it for public consumption.
And when you say title data, what does that term mean?
It's, well, PII data. We have okay. data from the IRS that we utilize, and we have authorization to do that under their title. And then we have data that comes in from the public and names and addresses and things like mm-hmm. that again, we need to protect. And, again, that's data. That's the family jewels.
So it's the sensitivity of it more than the type or format of it that
Correct.
That determines.
It's the sensitivity, right. So if it's presented in a way that's for public consumption, then we can more maybe cloud ready, if you will, when mm-hmm. we decide to disseminate it that way. Again, we have a whole project looking at the way we disseminate our data and standardizing the way we do that. I mentioned earlier our website, and I mentioned our APIs and apps. Well, we need to look at what cloud offerings might be there across the federal government to make data available in an easy-to-consume manner for the public.
Okay, we're going to get to applications, too, but I want to finish up the discussion on data with Sandra at the Peace Corps. What's your data strategy overlaid with your cloud thinking?
Mm-hmm. At Peace Corps, similar to Census, we are undergoing an exercise right now to look at the types of data that we produce and to categorize it, so that we can make the best use of cloud for the public-facing. We have a lot of public-facing data from the time people first become interested in being a volunteer through the end of their service. There's a great deal of data that's collected and shared with other entities at the overseas location where they're working, because they're part of a development team often. And so other members of the team who might be other U.S. agency folks or local people mm-hmm. are interested in accessing that data. So we're examining all of our data at this point to determine what the best solution would be for storing it. A major focus we're looking at right now is in our domestic environment. We have an Office of Communications that focuses on gathering and keeping a lot of historical information about Peace Corps, and the repository is enormous. So we're right now looking at the best solution to allow those people to generate new communications material and also be able to readily access what they have, and that's likely going to be a cloud solution we're looking at right now.
So have you digitized the famous picture of President Kennedy with a young Bill Clinton and put that in the cloud forever?
If they haven't, they're going to do it this summer. There's a big project underway.
Okay, and so, Mary Jean, it seems like there's a distinction both by restriction or non-restriction of data, but also data that is available to applications versus data sets that are available to download for whatever the user has in mind. Maybe it's an app we don't know about. Is that a distinction that determines the best cloud strategy?
I think we're definitely seeing that, and looking, agencies are looking at what they should do. There are agencies that have to have these big repositories that they need to share with the broader community as part of their mission. And we can think of, you know, many, whether it's weather data or, you know, research data, things that are essential to their agency mission, as well as data that needs to be accessible by, for example, a compute farm. So mm-hmm. needs to be closer to the computer, to the engine, right, to be able to generate more useful information. So I think we're seeing both of those dynamics in different agencies, and it's all really tied to their missions.
All right, we're going to take a break on that note. Our guests today are Sandra Kuntz, Director of Production Operations and Infrastructure in the Office of the CIO at the Peace Corps. Harry Lee is Senior Computer Scientist for Infrastructure at the Census Bureau. David McLaughlin is CEO and owner of Blue River IT. And Mary Jean Schmidt, Federal Business Development Manager at NetApp. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin, and you're listening to Moving to the Cloud, What's the Best Approach for Me?, a panel discussion sponsored by NetApp and Blue River IT here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Today's IT organizations are under incredible pressure to respond rapidly to changing business needs. As agencies move to a cloud delivery model to reduce costs and increase flexibility, they shift from being builders and operators of their own data centers to being brokers of cloud services. Cloud solutions from NetApp and Blue River IT take the worry and complexity out of managing and maintaining control of data across private and public cloud resources, fostering greater innovation and IT responsiveness. Learn more. Visit netapp.com/cloud.
Welcome back to the panel discussion, Moving to the Cloud, What's the Best Approach for Me?, sponsored by NetApp and Blue River IT, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Our guests today are Sandra Kuntz, Director of Production Operations and Infrastructure in the Office of the CIO at the Peace Corps, Mary Jean Schmidt, Federal Business Development Manager at NetApp, David McLaughlin, CEO and owner of Blue River IT, and Harry Lee, Senior Computer Scientist for Infrastructure at the Census Bureau. And earlier we talked about data. Let's talk about the purpose of data, which is really applications. And if you would give us an overview, Sandra, of what the Peace Corps' application strategy is for the cloud, what apps or applications, you got to be careful because it's not quite the same word anymore. You have moved to the cloud, what you plan to do and what you're looking at over the next couple of years.
Okay. At Peace Corps, of course, our business is volunteers, supporting volunteers.
And they all have smartphones now.
And they all have smartphones, and they all have preferred ways of getting to their data. But our challenge is making sure that volunteers in remote locations, as well as the Peace Corps staff overseas in our 70 somewhat remote locations, and headquarters staff can all have access to that same data. In some cases, it's also the public that needs to have access to that data. So our first couple of applications that we moved to the cloud were around the volunteer onboarding process, which is actually a very lengthy and complex process. It would not seem like it should be, but lots of information is gathered about potential volunteers and as they move through the process.
I mean, it's almost like security level clearance to some degree.
It is, and, you know, looking at all sorts of issues, education, health, travel needs, et cetera. So looking at a number of applications around that application process and onboarding is what was initially taken to the cloud a few years ago. And that has worked out well. We've learned a lot of lessons around how best to support applications and data in the cloud. We've learned about contracting and service level agreements that need to be in place to manage those services. Apart from that, we have also put our public website out into the cloud several years ago, and that was also a successful endeavor. It's worked well for us, learned a lot of lessons, and going forward, we are looking at cloud first, so what applications that come along really could be put in the cloud most easily. Our challenges, again, are for things that have to be globally accessed. from our remote locations, just making sure that the cloud solution works well in those cases. Going forward, we are focusing on storage and moving as much of our internal data that makes sense out to the cloud. And I had mentioned earlier our communications repository, which is really very vast, moving that out to a storage location in the cloud. We've also been looking at tools and management tools and looking at where cloud solutions in those areas are appropriate. And we've chosen...
When you say management tools, you mean software management tools?
Software, network, things, for example, that manage... I mentioned bandwidth challenges and most efficiently using our bandwidth. There are cloud-based tools around that, so, you know, filtering traffic that comes and goes and making sure we're effectively using our bandwidth. That we've done in the cloud. We also at Peace Corps, as you mentioned, our volunteers are very mobile-based, mobility-oriented, and so we're looking at MDM, mobile device management solutions that are cloud-based as well. For applications going forward, we have a very effective process of involving business owners, our security staff, financial and contracts people really early on in the start of a new project that might end in an application. So we're trying to get the right people oriented at the beginning to choose the best solution.
And briefly about that volunteer onboarding process that is in the cloud. Is that a web interface, and is the application and the data all together in the same cloud?
Yes. Yes,
and,
it is.
And is that virtualized?
Yes, it is virtualized. It's a solution that was actually developed initially for the cloud by a provider that we're using. Yes.
And but you haven't done the email piece yet.
We have not done the email piece. And our challenge there has been, again, just making the best decision for overseas. The majority of Peace Corps staff actually work overseas. And, again, I can't stress enough the difficulties we have connecting with them. So we want to make sure right now they're very self-contained. If they should lose their connection to the Internet, they need to be able to continue functioning because there's people there who have to continue work. So that's a big factor for us.
So that means data at rest on the device sometimes.
Data at rest on the device, and we have all our security concerns around that as well. So.
And David, before we move to Harry on what the census is doing application-wise, I just wanted to ask you, while we're on that thought, what do you find that customers do that do have tenuous connections, and yet, you know, the data center is solid, but it's the connection between device, either PC too or a mobile device, and back where the applications and data sit?
We've seen quite a bit of that over the years, and it started initially when you saw the data center consolidation, so people taking a lot of data from what was the edge and putting it in the center now. So there are tools that you can use to actually optimize the connections. There are tools that you can use to keep data close, but still somewhere keep it in the center. So you have to look at each individual environment and determine what's best. So if you're in 70 locations around the world and your provider is doing, you know, very, very low bandwidth, supporting low bandwidth, and the cost is really high, you may have to keep your data close to them. It really just depends on what people need. So when we build something out and design it, it's based on what works best, but what's also the most flexible. So you really have to take a look at it closely.
So you might have some data cached locally that
Correct.
Is frequently
Correct.
Invoked, and that saves bandwidth and so
or
on.
Or how do you get the data back for archive purposes or disaster recovery? Or is this data that you can keep at the edge, you know, in a location that maybe isn't as quite secure? So there are tools that you can use to push data around, both from the mechanism to make it go as well as to speed it up.
Okay, and Harry, tell us about census and applications. What have you moved? I think you have done email. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what else, especially in the mission critical area?
I'll talk about what we have moved and what we're looking at. How's that?
Fair enough.
So a couple things. One, we do use a cloud-provided service for web content delivery and for some security controls to prevent some denial-of-service attacks based on a lot of increased usage by the public. We are moving to web-based email. We're doing that this fiscal year, hope to be done by the end of the fiscal year. We do use a cloud-based service for mobile device management to manage all of our mobile devices. And I think Sandy said you're going there, so maybe we can share some experiences with you. Virtual meetings, customer relationship and experience management. We are doing customer satisfaction surveys using a web-based tool, some social media measurement and monitoring. And for the previous decennial, we used a cloud-based service for some personnel recruitment and hiring processes. Going forward, I mentioned earlier that we're looking at our survey life cycle around the collection, the processing, the analysis, and dissemination of data. And we're looking at the business processes and all the applications that support each of those components of our survey life cycle to identify where cloud-based solutions might benefit us the best. So a couple of things we're looking at, no plans, but just looking at right now. I mentioned internet data collection.
Mm-hmm.
We're using that for all of our surveys and censuses now. High-performance computing capabilities, data analytics, help desk resources. Development and test environments where we might need some on-demand services, specifically around testing, high-performance testing and things like that that might best using a cloud. Managing supporting field staff. The field staff supports all the surveys and all the censuses. We're looking at cloud-based solutions for that as well. So while we're looking at those applications and business solutions that might could use a cloud, our focus internally has been this private cloud to kind of really optimize our current environment and to build that framework, service delivery framework, so when we bring these applications on via cloud-based, they'll just fit into this existing framework.
All right, so it sounds like a lot of homework, especially with high-performance computing and analytics. Those kind of, I see those as paired in some way.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and MDM, we heard about mobile device management, and Mary Jean, that's an area of software nobody ever heard of 5 years ago. Now it's burgeoning, but it's really more than just counting BlackBerries and iPhones. It's a matter of, in fact, all devices, all endpoints are coming into MDMs, and application repositories and download sites are part of it. They're really spreading, and so people have a choice of cloud versus locally hosted or internally hosted. What are you seeing as the trend there as it's and just using that as an example of the type of new style application that may originate with cloud?
Right. Well, I think it's kind of like a confluence, really, of, you know, how a user wants to access or needs to access an application and where the application and or data, you know, associated with it reside, right? So just as Harry and Sandra said, we've seen a lot of agencies have gone to MDM as a service, basically. And, in fact, NetApp as a company, we use a cloud, if you will, for mobile device management for our company. So that's something I think you're seeing across the board. But then it kind of brings back that same question we talked about a little earlier about the data and the application workload. So some applications will be, you know, easily and readily put in a cloud environment, so a mobile device can access them, whether it's over a bandwidth that's very limited or something that's more robust, and some might not lend themselves to that environment. Harry mentioned some of the high-performance computing analytics. Those might not be the best things to be running on, you know, your mobile device, but by and large, agencies still have to provide those capabilities, so they might want to look to put the data and the compute closer together, whether they use, it in-house or whether they use a combination of, you know, kind of a private, if you will, data store and a public kind of hyperscaler compute farm or some variation. So all those are possible today. That's what's so interesting about the environment.
And so when thinking about cloud applications, do you have to look at the applications themselves, not just the criticality, but the nature of them? Some of them are bursty. Some of them are steady streaming. Some of them can take some latency. Some of them can't. I mean, there's a lot of considerations. Do you have to? Is there like a decision tree in some manner that people follow as a methodology to do that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's absolutely about the workload and the requirements of it. I probably can't speak to the decisions that the agencies have to make. I think it's a heavy lifting task, right, to understand where you put the workload and what performance requirements it has and balance that with the sensitivity of the data you have to access. And then on top of it, the access management or the way that your end users are going to access it, whether it's the repository Sandra spoke of that needs this global reach, you know, on maybe the smallest device, or whether it's something one of the census, you know, data scientists needs to do to develop more information. So it's really a tough road, I think, for agencies. It's not an easy task.
Yeah, and, of course, we've been talking a lot about mobility, but desktop PCs still exist, notebooks. I mean, those are still maybe they don't sell as many as they did, but they're very much part of the computing landscape. So the cloud has to feed the Ethernet in the building at some point also. David, how does that figure in? What do people look at in that environment?
Well, again, it's not always the case where you can just throw more bandwidth at it. A lot of it comes down to, you know, the applications that you're deploying and how they're accessed. We've seen customers, for example, that are in the Midwest that feel like they can put a big connection between there and a data center in Virginia, and that will be sufficient for them to run storage locally and compute in the cloud and together, when that's not really the case. So bandwidth is a big concern. One of the things back to applications is, you know, there are some applications that people will feel, you know, they're web-enabled, they're very easy to move to a cloud environment. I think that people don't always see that there are applications that will remain in-house and how those are accessed in a public or commercially available cloud environment. How do those connections take place? So if you're in a data center in Europe, let's say, or you have a location in Europe and your cloud provider's in Virginia, Ashburn, Virginia, how does that happen? There's content distributed networks that work. There's all sorts of different ways to address it. But, again, it comes down to a lot of what the end user requirements are and what's available.
Okay. Yes, and that gets to a census. Harry, you mentioned earlier management. Also, you have an infrastructure now that is hybrid, that there's census data centers and there's public clouds and private clouds, maybe even other government clouds, maybe commerce there. So what's your approach to managing all of that infrastructure? Some you own, some you rent, some you – it's the government, but it's not yours.
Well, we have – I guess I'll use the word governance around managing the infrastructure. We have three things that help us kind of guide the decision-making around infrastructure and how we best manage it. One is something called enterprise architecture, right? So it's where do we need to go to support the strategic plan and the mission of Census. And that identifies, from a technical perspective, we looked at five kind of platforms that we need to manage over time, infrastructure platforms. Cloud is one of those. So what do we need to do from today going forward from a target state? And we manage this thing called infrastructure roadmap. So in addition to cloud, there's a platform for mobility. There's a platform for communication and collaboration. There's a platform for security, for data management, and for service management. So we use that roadmap to guide where we need to go. We also have an infrastructure or IT investment review board that approves all of the investments going forward, and the CEO has approval authority of all those investments. But in support of that, you know, we have an engineering process. So we talked about cloud first. We talked about virtualized first, shared first. So when a team puts together a detailed set of requirements and looks at the design alternatives, we look at those options. And so we have to check the box. Did we look at a cloud? Is it satisfy our requirements or not? Did we look at shared services? Did we look at what's the third thing I said before? Virtualization first. So we use the roadmap and the governance process to help make good, smart decisions about where we use cloud.
All right, we're going to take a short break on that note. Our guests today are Sandra Kuntz, Director of Production Operations and Infrastructure in the Office of the CIO at the Peace Corps, Harry Lee, Senior Computer Scientist for Infrastructure at the Census Bureau, Mary Jean Schmidt, Federal Business Development Manager at NetApp, and David McLaughlin, CEO and owner of Blue River IT. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin. You're listening to Moving to the Cloud, What's the Best Approach for Me?, a panel discussion sponsored by NetApp and Blue River IT, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Today's IT organizations are under incredible pressure to respond rapidly to changing business needs. As agencies move to a cloud delivery model to reduce costs and increase flexibility, they shift from being builders and operators of their own data centers to being brokers of cloud services. Cloud solutions from NetApp and Blue River IT take the worry and complexity out of managing and maintaining control of data across private and public cloud resources, fostering greater innovation and IT responsiveness. Learn more. Visit netapp.com/cloud.
And welcome back to our panel discussion, Moving to the Cloud, What's the Best Approach for Me?, sponsored by NetApp and Blue River IT, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Our guests today are Mary Jean Schmidt, Federal Business Development Manager at NetApp, David McLaughlin, CEO and owner of Blue River IT, Harry Lee, the Senior Computer Scientist for Infrastructure at the Census Bureau, and Sandra Kuntz, Director of Production Operations and Infrastructure in the Office of the CIO at the Peace Corps. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin. And before the break, we were talking about management of these mixed and hybrid infrastructures, and we heard from Harry how the Census Bureau uses enterprise architecture approach. Sandra, how does the Peace Corps handle the fact that you have infrastructure in so many formats?
We similarly have an enterprise architecture with a roadmap that guides us looking 5 years out as we work with each of our business customers to figure out what applications they either have that are aging and need attention or processes that, you know, need some work around in the area of applications. So we have a very effective process for working with business owners, as I mentioned earlier, very early in their decision-making process, so we can ensure that our roadmap is all-inclusive to the extent that we can know, you know, the future, and also that we plan around the infrastructure needs, whether they be internal on-premise or cloud solutions that we're looking for from the very beginning. So, you know, the planning around the early startup is very critical to us. Then as applications are, you know, going under development, we have a life cycle that we follow, which, again, also has checkpoints throughout the way to make sure that the application is on track and that the development, should it be going with the cloud, with a hosted solution, that we have, you know, all of the things that we need to be thinking about checked off. Then once we're into having applications and infrastructure that we're managing, what's really important to us and what we've been focused on over the last several years is standardizing our environment to really streamline what we're supporting. And then we're also baselining. So we're looking at our applications to see, you know, what's required, what do they require to operate as effectively as possible. And then from a customer standpoint, what's acceptable? What's an acceptable level of service? Because that's critical for no matter whether we're doing an in-house development or upgrade or we're sending something out to the cloud, what's going to be an acceptable level of service? Mm-hmm. That's a big key area for us.
And you mentioned the business owners. Mm-hmm. Is it important for, say, the person, to go back to the application we spoke about earlier, the volunteer onboarding, mm-hmm. for example, whoever is in charge of that,
right.
Is it important for that person to know where their application is, how it's being handled technologically? Does it matter to them?
It doesn't necessarily matter to them where it's being hosted or how what infrastructure is supporting it necessarily, but what they're going to be very interested, of course, in is if it's not responsive when they need it, if it's not available. So all of those kind of service level agreement things are what we focus on with them, just making sure up front that everyone's level expectations are level set.
Mary Jean, it seems like all of this would cause a new approach that requires some maybe cultural or thinking change for CIOs and data center managers, systems administrators that now have a wholly different looking environment than they might have been used to for the past 10 years, or even those that go back to the client-server days. It's really different from that.
Right, and a couple of thoughts. You know, I heard Terry Halverson, the Navy CIO, speak last week that's, in fact, one of the attributes that he's looking at to determine the blend of cloud services. So, for example, it's not just about security, which is obviously important. It's not just about data, which we talked about earlier, but also the social environment and how the end users expect to receive, you know, the information that they're trying to get or access to the applications. But another thought I might kind of venture into that's along those lines is that, as Sandra and Harry both said, they're no longer going to be these operators of, you know, big data centers. They're going to be these brokers of services. So the next thing on the horizon is this whole idea of a cloud broker. And will agencies become their own cloud broker, and or will they use one that's provided, for example, through a GSA service? So we're seeing this, you know, new frontier of single panes of management, if you will, across cloud service providers. It's a whole new, another whole new area for agencies to consider.
Yeah, because you have your old standard SMTP applications to manage the network that you own through the Ethernet and so on across the, you know, the internet works, and all that has to somehow be inculcated into the cloud or the cloud into it, correct?
Right, right. I mean, I think the nirvana for an agency, if I might use that term, is to be able to manage both the on-premise, you know, kind of the legacy hardware-based applications that they have to keep on those environments because they're maybe written in a language that doesn't port so well to a new environment, or and also their maybe hyperscaler-based apps, et cetera, across, you know, the environment with one management interface or one view from the CIO level.
Sure. David, do you ever see that? Say you build a cloud out for someone and they walk in and it looks like nothing they've ever seen before and they wonder how they're going to manage it all?
Well, I think there's a perception that it is going to be much different than what they're used to. But if you're looking at a pure infrastructure side, what you deploy in the cloud is it's still compute resources, it's still networking, it's still virtualization, there's some automation built in. All those things are still there. It's just someplace else. So then you have to explain, this is how you actually access that. This is how you deploy your application. So it's not such a big shift when they actually start to understand how it works. What's surprising to me is when we started this process, you know, over the last 4 years, is how many people you go into, they run data centers, and they say, please take my data center. Take my stuff. I want to focus on my applications. My mission objectives, I want to do that. That's where I want to spend my money. I don't want to have to pull equipment in and rack it and stack it and track my service level agreements with the so forth and so on. So a lot of people are understanding now that, you know, hey, let's take care of the infrastructure first, and then we can address the applications, how we handle it. Another interesting thing is when people say, we want you to do this as a service. Maybe it's patch management. Maybe it's something that they do already. And they're saying, well, I have staff that can now do my infrastructure, but if I go to a cloud, I don't have anybody to do that. Mm-hmm. You need to help me with that. So if you look at the broker model that people are saying, well, a broker would say to me that you're taking different components of a cloud, putting them together and giving it to somebody. But what people really want is those components, but they want somebody to actually manage it for them too and provide that as a service. So we're seeing quite a bit of that as well.
And, Harry, you mentioned earlier that the broker, that Census might be its own cloud broker, you know, the IT department. What's involved with brokering, and how do you make sure that SLAs get translated, service-level agreements get translated through the broker layer to the actual cloud infrastructure provider?
Well, everything that we need to do as an IT service provider or a broker needs to really be based on the defined needs of the business, and that needs is performance, its availability, scalability, and so forth. So really it's also managing that customer relationship. So one of the things we've done in all decisions that the CAO makes, he has his counterparts from all the other eight other directorates involved in these decisions. So it's about the service. When you look at we can control what we have on premise, but once you go to an external provider, you need to make sure that whatever contractual relationships you have in place, those expectations of the customers translate back into that agreement or contract with the provider. And we talked earlier about that. There's a lot of things to think about. And so a cloud service broker might make sense even for the IT department as a broker, as an intermediary to a lot of different providers that are out there.
So if the business unit or business owner doesn't see the cloud itself, at least they can go to somebody inside Census that does see it and say, you know, Harry, what's going on here?
Right. The service should be transparent. Our service provider should be transparent to the end user. We just manage that relationship and the expectations of SLAs translating them into anybody else we might be working with providing those services.
And, Sandra, what do you seek in SLAs? What is it that makes a good provider for you, and does it vary according to application and so on?
I think it will vary according to application and what the customers of that particular application need, whether it's a global application, some of our things are not. They're just, you know, one line of business. Peace Corps is also looking at the idea of the cloud broker role and looking at it from, you know, startup, basically. We're looking at internalizing that role within the CIO and having that be the expert who would be the bridge between the cloud services. We're starting that up, and then our internal customers, as you had mentioned. We think that's a vital role that right today we don't have, but we're seeking that.
So also internal brokering.
Exactly, yeah.
And so how do they get their information? I mean, what are they? That's a new task for the CIO. You're confident that they can acquire the skills. It sounds like a very specialized kind of art able to pick a cloud.
Well, I think the specialized art of it may be in what we're thinking is we need someone who has the expertise in what's available and what exactly to look for and all the kind of gotchas that we need to plan ahead for, but also be able to be inside our enterprise so that they can know our business and, you know, really be that bridge. And it may not be one resource. It might be a team with, you know, some expertise that we're bringing in with knowledge of the cloud environment.
And so that means if, say, you do move email to the cloud at some point, and suppose you choose one of the well-known providers of email that are in the cloud, probably you don't really need to go see what they have.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're moving critical data, say, about volunteers, mm-hmm. about distinct programs that are unique to Peace Corps, then you might want to have a little bit closer touch to that.
Right. I mean, today we work closely with the business owner to, you know, see if their process needs any sort of reengineering. We want it to be as streamlined as possible. But then once we have that, you know, it might touch many parts of our organization globally, and just having a team or a resource that can help us figure out the best placement of the data in the application.
And so who's involved in all these decisions? I mean, who do you pull together for that?
Well, similar to what Harry said, I mean, our CIO works within a team of her peers, and she has established very good processes for gathering early in the budget planning process so that we are aware of what other parts of the agency are looking at in terms of their priorities. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's all aligned, of course, to the agency strategic plan, et cetera, but coming down to the actual planning of things for the out years, our CIO works closely with her peers, and they reach agreements and, you know, sign off on plans.
Mary Jean, what do you see as best practices across industries for establishing base level requirements, service level agreements, and also for choosing who's the best cloud provider for a particular situation?
Right. So number one, I think agencies have a lot of choice and growing numbers of choices of cloud providers, be it for software as a service, you know, down to infrastructure as a service. But a couple of thoughts. I think one best practice that is starting to emerge and become more prevalent is that agencies are now releasing, you know, drafts for information, et cetera, for market research that are more based on service levels and what the mission needs for that environment versus kind of the functional requirements that were of, you know, several years ago versus, you know, spelling out what type of, you know, compute, what type of storage, what type of network they needed. And now it's more about, I need this level of availability, I need this type of access, I need, you know, et cetera. So I think that's coming. It's not 100% shifted, but I think that's going to take some time just because we still see a lot of more on-premise kind of functional environments. But even there, we're seeing agencies, you know, kind of move to more of converged infrastructures, even for their kind of in-house environments, because it takes away the part of the environment that they don't need to do anymore because it's not germane to their mission, like cabling and racking and stacking.
So a converged environment is separate from a consolidated, or a separate meaning from a consolidated environment.
Right.
How?
Well, a converged environment that perhaps knits together some of the components that in the past agencies themselves or their workforce has kind of knit together themselves. For example, you have, you know, storage, compute, and network that you need in a stack to run applications. Mm-hmm. So in the past, there might have been a procurement for one of those pieces or all of those pieces together, and now they can buy them kind of, procure them kind of knit together in a, let's just use the term kind of cloud in a box or infrastructure in a box, if you will. And so that type of design and testing and qualifications doesn't have to be done for even for an on-premise environment.
And, David, I wanted to ask you in that respect, we hear more and more about virtualization moving from the server and then the desktop and now to the network and to storage. Do you see that really coming on in a big way, and how does that affect cloud construction and cloud services?
Well, it does, and it already is, in my opinion, there. If you look at a lot of the big cloud providers now, a lot of that is already virtualized. You can go online and swipe a credit card and deploy a network with applications running and storage all provisioned in a matter of minutes now. So a lot of that has been done, both at the private side and then in the community side. So, again, the infrastructure has moved pretty far along now where people are able to do that. I think what's interesting is on the application side, what the automation in the infrastructure is going to allow people to do now is if Census develops a PII, PCI-compliant solution that's web-enabled on a mobile device, now because of the ability to redeploy it over and over again in an easy fashion, they then become the broker to another group within the federal government. They may need the same service. So that collaboration is pretty exciting to me, to see how each agency can leverage each other's skill sets and hard work. So that's coming down the road, too.
All right. On that note, that brings our discussion to a close. I want to thank today's guests, Harry Lee, Senior Computer Scientist for Infrastructure at the Census Bureau, David McLaughlin, CEO and owner of Blue River IT, Mary Jean Schmidt, Federal Business Development Manager at NetApp, and Sandra Kuntz, Director of Production Operations and Infrastructure in the Office of the CIO at the Peace Corps. I'm Tom Temin, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to Moving to Cloud, What's the Best Approach for Me? Panel, sponsored by NetApp and Blue River IT on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.